Undisputed Politics podcast is hosted by Robert Wilson Jr., a young Black gay activist from the Mississippi Delta. He started this podcast to share his raw and unfiltered opinions on issues around the world. Grab a glass of wine and tune into the podcast on Apple, Google, Spotify, or any other major streaming platforms. And let's get into what's happening all around us. The show starts now.
Grambling State Athletics announcing on Tuesday that they have fired head volleyball coach Chelsea Lucas after a short and tumultuous time with the university. You got to remember, all the way back in April, Lucas cut the entire 19-player roster that suited up for the 2021 team, leaving the outgoing players 4 months to find a new program. Fast forward now 3 months, and Lucas is also out of a job following an internal investigation done by the school, with no further details coming out at this time. The school announced as well on Tuesday that a national coaching search is underway. Grambling Athletic Director Rick Scott announcing that all volleyball student athletes that receive scholarships for the 2022-23 season will keep scholarships this year and remain on the team, with walk-ons continuing to hold their roster spot. Now, the season will begin in late August, so the Tigers have just under 2 months to find a new replacement.
So, Grambling State University, over the last couple of months, have been going through some things when it comes down to their athletics department. One of the major things that it first started off with, the coach that got hired as the assistant for the football team. You know, all of that happened, blah, blah. He eventually resigned, didn't last only nothing but like a few days. There was so much backlash over the fact that he was even hired. Then we fast forward to around about that same time, they hire a new volleyball coach. Now, it's customary that when new sports programs get new coaches and different things like that at these universities, normally they don't retain all of the players on the team. For the most part, scholarships are just like, they're not really binding contracts, I'll say it like that, until they've actually processed in your account. So when it comes down to it, basically, you're given the scholarship. It's only binding if you complete the terms of it or whatever. And like I said, the money is placed into your actual account and it is actually spent. And pretty much what happens is, if you're on a sports team, if you're on a band or anything like that, you have to basically retry out. And a lot of schools have policies where they don't really retry out people, specifically for sports that are like, you know, volleyball. You don't really have that many people on a team, on a certain team. So oftentimes, you know, players really don't, it's not like a tryout type of thing where every semester or every year they have to try out. It's more of next year I'm guaranteed my scholarship. Things like that. Same thing for band, for the most part. Most band programs try to retain their numbers and different things like that. And if budgets permit, they normally will keep the same instrumentalist or whatever without making them try out again and different things like that. So normally, in most cases, that's what happens. It's not something that happens everywhere. It's not something that is set in stone as you have to do it, but most places do it. And it's not a necessarily an illegal thing for a coach or a athletic department to cut an entire team. So a couple of months ago, that's exactly what happened. The new coach came in, and the new coach pretty much had a meeting with each player individually and pretty much basically said that their scholarships would not be renewed. Now, it sounds simple. It sounds really simple. Okay, there's a new coach. She's coming in. She wants to have her own regime of students, blah, blah, blah. And it's kind of okay. But The issue is, one being that it's an HBCU, and we're talking about uplifting black women. We're talking about uplifting young girls. The fact that this coach would come in at the time that she came in, because she came in around about February, March. So you're coming in around about February, March. The transfer portal for colleges, for different athletic programs, they've already kind of, you know, found their recruits via signing day and different things like that. So they aren't really just necessarily looking for people to be on their teams. So it's more of the timing. Then you also got to look at the fact that you're inconveniencing a lot of these girls. A lot of these girls are seniors, you know, this is their last year and their year is uprooted. They have to figure out what are they going to do to pay for this senior year. A lot of them can't just transfer to another school, because if you know about the education system, specifically higher ed, you know that a lot of colleges, once you make it to a certain level outside of general ed, once you make it into more of your major courses, for instance, you wouldn't, a class that you're taking, if you're a med student at Jackson State, probably wouldn't, some of the courses related to your medical degree wouldn't be accepted at another college, because there are different practices and different curriculums on how they would teach that particular course. And so it wouldn't be transferable. So you would have to take the class again if you were to transfer to said university. And so that's also a problem, because now you're inconveniencing these young ladies who may have had maybe one or two semesters left, and now they have to transfer to another school, and they've been under the assumption, well, I've gotten my scholarship the last 2 or 3 years or however, and now I don't have my scholarship anymore. Then you also thinking about the new recruits, the students coming right out of high school, students who were offered scholarships, turned down scholarships to go to other schools, and now you're revoking their scholarship. Now you're no longer giving them the offer, and so now it's the end of the school year. Like I said, most schools have already chosen who they want, and once said person turned them down to go to such and such school, it's like, now we found somebody to replace you, so now we don't even really need you. And so you've placed a lot of these young women in a predicament that is making them, that will make them stressed. They're going to be, it's just so much that goes into it. You know, I can only imagine the mental toll that it's taking. College is already stressful. Let's be honest. College is already stressful. Then you add on to it the aspect of being at a HBCU. So you're thinking about things like the underfunding. You're thinking about things like the dorms and different things like that, the things that they have had to endure just being the fact that they go to an HBCU. Then you also add on to that the stress, like I said, of college, the stress of having to pay for college. Most black students go to school under scholarships and under student loans and different things like that. It's not like we just going to school free. If that was the case, most black people would not be going to college, because we're a minority group that is more middle class. We have a large segment that lives poor. And so we just wouldn't be able to afford to just go to college for free, like most other people of different races, more specifically Caucasians, white folk. And so, just putting all of that into perspective, and then the fact that what makes this such more egregious, what this volleyball coach has done, is the fact that she's an alum of the school. So pretty much, she is an alum. She graduated from Grambling. She spent some time at Alcorn University down in South Mississippi, and then she also spent some time at University of Arkansas Pine Bluff, UAPB, in Arkansas, and spent some time there before she was hired on at Grambling. So pretty much, like I said, there's a lot of turmoil going on. And now I slightly feel a little bit of concern for this young lady. And the reason why I feel just a little bit is because you can tell already that there's an attempt to railroad her. There's an attempt to throw her under the bus. So when this situation first happened, a lot of the news was, what are the school doing? How did the school not know this was happening? This is something that the school should have known about. Why didn't nobody know about it? Where's the athletic director? Different thing. The conversation was more along those lines. Like, what's going on? How could this possibly happen without anybody approving it? Who approved this? Come to find out, at first, a lot of the news was, oh, the athletic director, he stands behind her, all of this stuff. Now it's like, oh, no, we investigated and we feel like you was wrong. You didn't know she was wrong when she first did it. When she first did it, you stood behind your coach. And so a lot of people are calling for his firing. A lot of people are calling for the president of the university to do more. And it's a whole lotta. And the reason why I feel a little bit of concern for this young lady is because, like I said, I feel like there's an attempt to throw her under the bus as if she was the only one who was a problem in this particular situation. We all know at a university, coaches do have a lot of discretion. Depending on the sport, they do have a lot of discretion. For instance, basketball, that is a sport where the coach normally has a lot of discretion on what they do with the team and different things like that. Football, baseball, more popular sports are sports where the coaches have a lot more discretion on things like cutting players and things like that. Normally, sports that don't get that much recognition, normally big things like cutting the entire team, you would have to run that by the athletic director. And I'll even go as far to say the more major sports would even have to run that, something like that, by the athletic director. I mean, you're just not going to tell me that Deion Sanders at Jackson State would be able to cut the entire team, including his own sons, and the athletic director would just let that happen. I just don't see the scenario where that would actually happen without the athletic director having some type of approval, without the athletic director knowing something about it. And not even just the athletic director. So a decision like that, quite honestly, if you ask me, being that it would be so controversial, I would think that it would even go up as high as the actual president of the university, because it's so controversial. And that's exactly what happened in this particular situation. Now, after they got so much backlash, they're trying to throw this sister under the bus. Now, because I said I feel a little bit of compassion for her, let's not get that mistaken. Sis was wrong. I'm on the side of sis was wrong. I'm definitely on the side of sis was wrong. Because like I said, when you're looking at it, I understand that the excuse that a lot of people want to use is she's a new coach, she wanted to start her own thing, blah, blah. But at the same time, you have to look at the different things that the domino effect that this caused. You had seniors who literally were stuck not knowing how they would pay for the next one or two semesters that they may have left. Granted, okay, you want to build your own team. Okay, keep those seniors. They only have one or two semesters left. It wouldn't be such a burden to keep those seniors. Then you'll have a rest of the entire roster, and you deal with those. That would have been a good scenario. Or let's say all of the incoming freshmen, the new recruits, say to them, hey, I love what I understand, you know, we gave you this offer, but I would like to call you in and let's do a different tryout. I'll update your status on your scholarship offer and all of these things. And, you know, if I see that you are good as it relates to the tryout that you come in and do. That would have been a good thing. Or, you know, simply have a trial for the entire team. Have a set number of players you're going to keep. Set number you're going to set number that you're going to get rid of. But to cut the entire team. And then I understand there's also news out there that kind of contradicts that the coach actually cut the entire team. There are some articles out there that says some of the students actually quit. A few of them actually quit once they realized that, you know, the entire team was basically being cut. And quite honestly, why would you want to be on a team like that? You've been with these sisters of yours, maybe some of them 2 or 3 years, some of them 4 years, some of them maybe 1 or 2 semesters, however. But these sports teams are like families. I was in the band in high school. A lot of people don't consider band to be a sport, and that's fine. But I was in band in high school. Now I'll tell this quick story. And when I was in band, the relationships that I built with people when I was in band, some of the people that I met when I was a part of the band for 6 years, I started in elementary school and I stayed in until I was a senior in high school. And a lot of the relationships I built with the teachers from the different places we visited, as far as going to different competitions and different things like that, the relationships that are built within these sports, I mean, you spend most of your time with these people when you're going through whatever it is. For me, I was in high school, so I spent the majority of my time with these people. Going to football games, going to competitions, going to performances, and just different things like that. You spend so much time with these people in practice. You see people go through family losses. You see people go through not having money to be able to buy food when you go on different trips. Money to be able to afford a t-shirt or something that may be mandatory for a certain performance, or, you know, not having a ride home because this, that, and the third may be going on with their parents and their driving situation. Not having a water or snacks like everyone else may have. You just see so many things going on with different people, and you build relationships with people in these sports and being a part of these things. And for me in college, even just thinking about college, I spent a short time in college, but I didn't play a sport or I wasn't in band. But you also transferred at the college. You're thinking about the stress of having to go to class. You're thinking about students who are stressed out about their classwork and different things like that. And you're bonding with these people. You see these people at practice. These people are helping you study. These people are helping you grow, go through that particular stage of your life. And so for a coach to come in and cut the entire team, or the majority of the team, the remaining few, I wouldn't even want to stay, because you've gotten rid of all of my sisters. So why would I want to stay here? You've already created a toxic relationship between myself and you as the coach and the player, because you've cut all of my sisters, all of my teammates. All of the people who I've been able to cry to, all the people who may have showed up to my grandmother's funeral, or all of the people who may have showed up for me when I had a heartbreak, or all of the people who may have supported me when I got pregnant and had to go to get an abortion, or any, I'm just throwing out different scenarios that may have or may not have happened, where these students were able to build these relationships, and for you to come in and cut the majority of them, it leaves a bad taste. For me, specifically, just for me, and most people, because clearly the pressure was amped up, and then now y'all trying to do something about it, which is y'all fired her. But more needs to be done. I'm waiting to see the NCAA do something about scholarships. Scholarships need to be guaranteed, period. At least for one semester. If you give me a scholarship, I sign the dotted line, and the scholarship is for one semester, it needs to be guaranteed for that semester. I don't need you in the middle of the semester trying to snatch away my money, and now I got to figure out in the middle of the semester how I'm going to pay for it. I get it, performance and all of that other stuff. But it should be just like a job. The only way I should be able to lose this money, the only way I should be able to lose this scholarship is if I do something that's detrimental. But me just performing, not performing up to par, different things like that, no. The team not winning as many games, no. Because you're inconveniencing me. And I get it. The people who believe in capitalism and all of that will say, well, blah, blah, blah. You're inconveniencing them and it's all about the money. But that's just not the way you do it. And so we'll see how this story goes. I'll keep updating y'all, but that's just my thoughts on it. We'll be right back after this quick break. And on the next part of the show, we'll be talking about something very important to me. And I have some very important thoughts on it. So I'm not going to share it right now. I'll see y'all after the break and we'll discuss it after the break. All right. Be right back.
Ruck the Vote is a nonpartisan nonprofit dedicated to building the political power of young people. For 30 years, Ruck the Vote has revolutionized the way we use pop culture, music, art, and technology to engage young people in politics and build our collective power. To learn more, visit rockthevote.org.
The days since Jaylen Walker's death have brought outrage and sadness.
Jaylen was a sweet young man. He never caused any trouble.
It all started in the early hours of Monday morning. Akron police tell us around midnight, officers tried to pull over a car in the city's North Hill neighborhood for what they say was an equipment violation. The car, driven by Walker, took off and a pursuit made its way down Route 8. That's when officers say a gun was fired from the vehicle. A police captain said they didn't see a gun, but they heard gunshots coming from Walker's car. They chased him to the Firestone Park area where Walker got out of the car and ran. Police say the 25-year-old's next actions made officers believe he posed a deadly threat. So far, they have not elaborated on what those actions were. The officers then opened fire. On Friday, News 5 viewed the preliminary autopsy report, but we were not permitted to take notes or photos. The report showed Walker's body with more than 60 marked defects, which appeared to be gunshot wounds. Investigators have not yet officially confirmed how many shots officers fired and how many times Walker was hit. The family's attorneys say they were told 8 officers, 7 white and 1 black, were involved in the shooting. All are currently on paid administrative leave. An investigative worksheet says Walker was shot in the face, abdomen, and upper legs. He was laying on his back, handcuffed when the medical examiner arrived at the scene. The report also says a weapon was recovered from Walker's vehicle. Protests have been growing every day since the shooting. Thursday, a staple Independence Weekend event, Akron's Rib, White, and Blue Festival, was canceled. The mayor saying it's not the time for a city-led celebration. Saturday, officers placed barricades in front of police headquarters.
This next topic is, of course, very troublesome to me personally. I originally started this podcast in 2020. It was during the protest, and if you've been around since then, you remember some of my episodes from season 1, season 2 were very dramatic, and you know my feelings about police shootings and different things like that. Since time has passed, since 2020, I've definitely evolved on some of my opinions on different things. Back in 2020, I was not necessarily for abolishing the police. I was more on the side of reform and different things like that. But now, I literally, y'all, I'm tired. You would think that after 2020 and all the riots, all the protests, all the passionate people going out in the street, people going to jail. It was like the 60s all over again. And all we've got from it is a whole bunch of streets being painted with Black Lives Matter on them. We got a president in the White House who don't give a damn about Black folks, even though he's trying and he's claiming that he do, but clearly you don't. Because if he cared about Black people, all of that passionate protesting we did, all of that passionate rioting we did in 2020, we would have gotten the George Floyd Act passed by now if he gave a damn about Black people. All of this whining and crying and, oh, well, Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin. Okay. Do something about it. Take them from their committees. Do something. Do something. But no, Democrats and Joe Biden have made excuse after excuse. And since they are continuing to make excuse after excuse, a lot of these police shootings are still happening and happening. And they are getting worser and worser. Now, this is going to lead me into my next topic. Jaylen Walker. On June 22nd, young man was being pulled over for a traffic stop. Now, I'm just going to go through the story, then I'm going to share my opinion about how I feel about all of it once I share the logistics of the story. Apparently, he was being pulled over, and first of all, Jaylen Walker is a 25-year-old Black man. He was being pulled over for a traffic stop, obviously. He was unarmed when he was killed. Pretty much, they tried to pull him over. He tried to... He took them on high-speed chase, pretty much. As he was on the high-speed chase, obviously, he did like what most people do on high-speed chase. When he couldn't drive the car anymore or whatever, he got out and he started running. The police literally shot at this man 90 freaking times. 90 shots. 60 of the shots hit this man. And according to multiple reports, they've even released the body cam footage of 13 officers, 13 videos. They fucking handcuffed this man after they shot him 60 times. What? How more compliant can you be if you dead? Now, what has pissed me off about this situation? Now, you're going to have people who going to say, well, he was on a high-speed chase. All the lives he could have put in danger running from the police. Oh, my gosh. He must was hiding some. He was running from the police. He had to be hiding some. Oh, my gosh. They said they found a gun in the car because, according to reports, they found a gun in the car. Oh, my gosh. They saying that he shot at the police while he was on the chase. All of that is irrelevant. When you got a motherfucking white boy that just went and excuse my language, but we are unfiltered and we raw over here. If you want politically correct, go somewhere else. But he literally was shot at 90 times and was hit 60 times. And you got this white motherfucker that just took his ass and shot at all these people on the 4th of July and committed a mass shooting in Chicago, and they arrest him, take him into custody with not a bruise, not even a fucking bruise. Same thing with a lot of these other mass shootings. White motherfuckers going to schools, shooting up the whole damn school. Somehow they managed to get away, get arrested, able to see their trial, able to get their sentence. Somehow, all it takes is for black people to be accused of a crime. And that's it. It's a death sentence. The cops pull you over for a broken tail light. They put air fresheners in your window. And that's your death sentence. They pull up to your window to serve you your ticket, to ask for your ID, and they smell a little weed. That's your death sentence. Now, granted, he did run. Fine. I'll give you that. But to overkill somebody, to shoot off 90 fucking rounds. Can you just imagine even being in that scenario? The amount of blood splatter that could have been coming from this man's body as those bullets hit him. Round after round after round. Shot after shot after shot just hitting his body. How are these people even human? Are they even human? Like, come on now. And let's just not even be confused about the race of the officers. Oh, because yes, it was a black one. One of them was black. So let's not even be confused and say that, well, we see that it's a race issue within these police departments. And if we had more diverse, no, fuck all that. All of the reform shit at this point is out the window. The only training that police departments need is complete overhaul. All these big budgets, they buying tanks. They out here buying big shields. And somehow the shields only come out when black people protest. You can have a MAGA protest, and these people run all up in the damn Capitol of the United States Congress. And somehow that day there was no planning for them to be there. There was no planning, no intel, no nothing that would suggest that they was going to come up in that motherfucking riot. Even though it was very clear from what they did in Charlottesville, from what they did all up into the 2020 election, that they asses was going to come up in that damn Congress and complete riots. Yet somehow there wasn't the police presence was scarce. The number of Black Lives Matter protests that have been had at the United States Capitol, and you have had so many protests where people have been tear gassed, beaten, and all they get is a damn street named Black Lives Matter Plaza. Meanwhile, these white motherfuckers roll their ass up in their Congress, tear up shit, piss all on the walls, nooses everywhere, all type of shit going on. And all they get is a couple of people get arrested, a couple of people go to jail, the president that helped orchestrate all the shit, he's somewhere down at Mar-a-Lago planning his run for 2024. All these people who help plan the shit, they somewhere, Steve Bannon, all of them, they somewhere living their damn best life, avoiding going to trials, avoiding people who asking them questions, avoiding DAs and all type of shit, ain't going to jail. But Jaylen Walker, all he did was flee from a traffic stop. All he did was flee from a traffic stop. And they shot him down like he was Osama bin Laden. They shot him down like he shot up somebody, like he was the one who went into these schools and shot up these innocent babies. They shot him down as if he was one of the ones who went and shot up all those people in Las Vegas. They shot him down as if he was the one who shot up those children in Columbine. They shot him down like he went into a club and shot up all those gay people down in Florida. Like he went to a church as if he was the one who went to the damn grocery store in Buffalo and killed all those black people. Come on now. Stop asking black people why we sick. Stop asking black people why they don't like the police. Stop asking people why they feel like they need to abolish the police. And the All Lives Matter people. Oh, the All Lives Matter people. Oh, yes, yes, yes. Come on. Come on. For the All Lives Matter people, it's time for you too. I got something for you too. Because how you screaming all lives fucking matter, but your ass out here supporting supporting them getting rid of abortion and Roe versus Wade. You're supporting that. And yet somehow the party that you support don't want to give no assistance to make sure these babies are taken care of when they're here. They don't want to give no type of assistance to make sure that these people, that these women are able to carry these children through term. The mortality rates are through the damn roof. For black women especially. Come on now. Come on now. But all lives matter. All lives only fucking matter when you're talking about, when you're setting your ass up and you're talking about Black Lives Matter. People never said Black Lives Matter only. People only said Black Lives Matter because we tired. We were tired in 2020. We were tired when Trayvon Martin died. We were tired. We've been tired. We've had knees in our neck. We've been shot down while we were fleeing. And there are literal videos out here of white fucking people fucking fighting the police officers and not getting shot. Literal videos of people, white people running the police over and not getting shot. So come on now. Come on now. Like I said, in 2020, we thought that this was going to be the end. We thought that we would somehow, that there was a racial reckoning that was going to happen in this country. What we saw in 2020 was so reminiscent of what was going on in the 60s. We thought that there was going to be change in this country. But what we got is the same bullshit. Joe Biden ain't doing shit. Nothing different. He ain't doing shit. Ain't doing shit. Kamala Harris, she out here all at the damn Essence Festival. Y'all out here at the damn Essence Festival? Fine. But what else you doing for black people? Are you advocating for us? Like, are you really advocating for black people when you sitting in the damn room with Joe Biden? Because we're trying to figure it out. We're trying to figure out what are y'all doing? What's going on? What's going on? And I don't want to hear nothing about the Democrats have a messaging problem. Oh, my gosh, the messaging. Oh, my gosh, Democrats need better communication. No, come on now. Because you just got a report out here that your ass was going to put a damn judge on the bench before the Roe versus Wade case was overturned. Your ass was going to put a damn judge on the bench that was in favor was not in favor of abortion. So let's be real. Your asses ain't doing shit. You're putting on a motherfucking show. And for that, we could have kept Trump. For that, we could have went ahead and gave his ass a second term. Because come on now. Exactly what are y'all doing? End the fucking filibuster. End it now. End the filibuster now. If you listening to this podcast, call him up. If you're listening to the podcast, call them up. Call the White House. Call your Congress members. Send emails. Tell your coworkers. When you're at work, tell your coworkers. Hey, man, say, man. You seen what happened? Hey, man, say, man. You seen what happened? Get on the phone. Send some emails. Send some text messages. Come on. Come to the polls with me. Because we need to elect more people. One, we need to elect more people. We need to elect more people to the Senate. We need to elect more people to the Congress. To the House. We need to elect more people that's going to advocate for us. Like Gary Chambers down in Louisiana. He down there smoking his weed. Doing his ads for his campaign. And he taking the candidate that he's going up against to task for all of the stuff that he's doing wrong for the city of for the state of Louisiana. And he's being unapologetic about it. We need more like that. We need people who are going to call the Congress members. We need people who are going to be at their jobs asking their coworkers, how did you vote? You know, you ain't got to ask them who they voted for, but ask them how did they vote? What are the issues they are concerned about? We need to have these conversations. We need to have these. We need to get on these phone calls. We need to get on these emails. We need to send these text messages. We need to do all of these things, and we need to stay engaged. Because if we don't stay engaged, all of the protesting, all of the rioting that's been going on, all of the getting mad, all we doing is just getting mad and staying mad. And what good is it for us to get mad and stay mad? The ancestors, when they were fighting in the 60s, they were mad, but they didn't stay mad. Why you think we got so many Negro spirituals? We got so many uplifting songs from that time. Because when they was mad, oh, they was singing. They was living life. Because they knew a better day was coming. And see, what our problem is, and what I've seen a lot that's happening when I'm doing this activist work, a lot of the things that happen is, what happens is, people start working, and then when nothing happens, when nothing comes of it, they get complacent. They get sad. They get, well, oh, we not getting nothing. Democrats don't give a damn, true. But we have to continue to work. We have to stay engaged. And we have to do more than just be angry and protest and riot. So I pray for the people of Akron. I pray for the family of Jalen Walker. I pray that they receive justice, not in the form of some settlement, not in the form of some whack ass, the officers get fired. I pray that they get justice from these officers being arrested and charged and taken straight through the criminal justice system the same way everybody should, for murdering their child, for murdering that young man. Life cut too short, all because he fled the police. Something that wouldn't even got him no more than a couple of years in prison, maybe even probation. So come on now. Now that's all I got to say about that. Now, I'm going to take a quick break. I know that segment was a lot, so we're going to take a quick break here, just for you guys to gather yourself, for me to gather myself, and we're going to talk about some other things on the other side of the break. So we'll be right back on the Undisputed Politics Podcast.
We all have to be proud about who we are, because when we come together, we make a beautiful picture.
Pride to me is just everything I stand for. It's a time to spread love and positivity to all.
When you see that rainbow flag, you can't help but to feel so happy.
Pride is everybody coming together. Straight, gay, black, white. It's just a unity thing.
When I have my friends and it's Pride, we stand stronger than ever.
I know it's sometimes difficult to accept who you are, but once you find that acceptance, you'll find your pride.
All right, you guys, I know that last topic was, it was a lot. It was a lot, and I'll admit it was definitely a lot. It was a lot for me, just as well as it probably was a lot for y'all. I get really passionate about these things because I'm a black man and I live in the Mississippi Delta. And so people around me have experienced police violence. I've experienced police violence. And so it's just tiring to see this continue on with such lack of effort from political leaders to actually do something about it outside of spending taxpayer money on all of these settlements and different things like that. So, this next topic goes right into that. This next topic, most people know about Emmett Till. And I'm going to share my story and my relation or whatever to Emmett Till. Most people don't know my family, but I'm a part of the Banks McGee Wright family. More specifically, I'm a part of the Wrights family. And my lineage goes way, way, way back to the 1800s. And along that lineage, one of my great, 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 great uncles is Mr. Mose White. Mose Wright, who is famously known for being the uncle who was in the house the night that Emmett Till was kidnapped. So that's my relation to Emmett Till and all of that. My great great uncle, my fourth removed. I'll say it like that. So four generations of uncles. My fourth great uncle is Mr. Mose Wright. And so that's my relation to Emmett Till. And my family's very close, but being that Emmett Till's family was really married into the Wright family, it's not like we just, you know, I just have some close relationship to the family. So please don't take this as that. I'm just giving the history of my side of the family and my relation to Emmett Till, just to kind of put a perspective into my, you know, the way I have my opinion on this case. So I'm not speaking on behalf of the Emmett Till family or anything like that. Just sharing my relation to that particular, you know, to him and how I'm in line with that particular family. So, this next story, this next item that I'm going to talk about, of course, you know, the lady, Mrs. Bryant, Carolyn Bryant, is still alive. Miss Carolyn Bryant is famously known for being the one who pretty much started all of this whole thing with Emmett Till. With him being murdered, with him being kidnapped and all of that. Because if it wasn't for her being racist, we're just going to call it what it was, being racist, Emmett Till probably would still be alive today. Probably. And the reason why I say probably is because a lot of the racism and thing that was going on during the 50s and 60s, there's not a guarantee that him as a young black man that he probably would have made it. Simply because just looking at how his family fought for him after he passed away, I could only imagine some of the things that went on later on down the line in the civil rights movement. I think Emmett Till definitely, as he got older, probably would have been involved in the movement, which most likely, just looking at how a lot of young black men and a lot of young black women passed away due to being lynched or just being involved in the movement, were killed. I say probably. But that's neither here nor there, and that's not what we're here to talk about in this particular segment. Carolyn Bryant is still alive. And over the years, a lot of people have been calling for her to be arrested. A lot of people are saying if they can bring up cases against R. Kelly, if they can bring up cases against Bill Cosby and all of these other people, and Epstein and all of these other people, and they can go back 20, 30 years and all of this to fit, you know, to bring up old cases on them, even Kavanaugh. I mean, come on now, that people are saying, since they, if people can go back that far, there's no reason why we can't have this lady arrested almost 70 years later. Like, let's be real. If you can go back as that much time to arrest somebody for saying, oh, well, in 1975, he put some in my drink and I don't know what happened, but somehow he touched me and all this other stuff, and then there's a settlement and all this other stuff. You can go back. There's enough proof that she was directly involved. There's enough evidence. There's enough videos. There's enough statements. And while you cannot, if her husband was still alive, while we cannot try him again due to the double jeopardy or whatever, if he was still to be alive, there's definitely a case that could be brought against her. For most people who don't know Mississippi, a couple of years ago, well, not even a couple of years ago, almost a decade, at least a good decade ago, Edgar Ray Killen was charged and convicted for his role in Mississippi burning. For people who don't know Mississippi burning, that was the case of the three civil rights workers who came down to Mississippi to help register people to vote. They were having meetings at churches and all of this other stuff, and they were literally people were trying to run those men out of town. They were burning down the churches. They were doing everything they could to make sure those young men did not register nobody to vote. And guess what? They killed them. Edgar Ray Killen was the leader of the KKK at that time, organized the murder of these men. And the perpetrators included everybody from the mayor of that time of the town to the damn sheriff. Now, that was at least a decade ago. You would have to look up the facts on it. I don't have it right in front of me right now. But if you looked up the facts of his case or whatever, he was old as dust when he was tried. Many years had passed by, and they still found that there was enough evidence to arrest him and try him for that murder. Those murders. And he went to jail, and he died in jail. So all of this, well, she's too old. All of this, well, it's been too many years. Come on now. So the latest update, I'm from LaFleur County. I live in LaFleur County. I'm from Greenwood, Mississippi. And I know Mr. Stocksteel, who is our clerk here. And pretty much the family has been doing a search for anything. They've been searching for anything, arrest warrants, anything, witnesses, anything that may help get real justice for Emmett Till, because this woman is still alive. Emmett Till dead. He never got to live this long. His mother had to fight hard for the rest of her days for her son. So people are upset, and people want justice. They want her arrested the same way Edgar Ray Killen was, and so many of these other people. So, family been searching the courthouse and different things like that. And what has been discovered is an unserved warrant from almost 70 years ago. The warrant was dated for August 29th of 1955. It had Carolyn Bryant Dunham as the person that was on the warrant. And it was found last week by some workers who were pretty much searching for anything in the basement of the courthouse. Mr. Stocksteel, who is the clerk, he's approved it. saying that it's original, it is real. Our county sheriff is saying he would like to see it and all this other stuff, but I'm not going to even comment on that. And people are starting to protest. People are starting to protest because they want to see justice for Emmett Till. And I do too. But let me tell you where I'm focused at. And the reason why I'm not as vocal as it relates to social media, as it relates to, like I said, I live in LaFleur County. I'm originally from Greenwood, Mississippi. I have connections as it relates to my family lineage when it comes down to Emmett Till's family and different things like that. The reason why I'm not out in the streets and different things like that, like a lot of the more passionate people, is because for me, I'm just focused on things that I know will happen. America has showed us who they are. This lady won't be arrested. She won't be. If anything, she'll die before they arrest her. So I know that much. And so what I would like to focus on are things that matter. Of course, her being arrested. Of course, her being charged, her being sentenced and taken through the criminal justice system just like she should be is relevant and it matters. But at the same time, for me, it doesn't matter as much as it does for things like us getting the George Floyd Act. So I want us as a people to focus on things that are actionable that we can actually have. Because quite honestly, let's be real, her going through the justice system and being charged, arrested, and tried and all of that, she may die before she's even sentenced. And so all of that work would be not necessarily in vain, but it would just really be a waste of time. So I'm more focused on things like not us just getting a Black Lives Matter painted on the street. I would like Black Lives Matter to be the focus of the entire cities. Budgets that are going to mental health. Budgets that are going to educating Black and brown children. Budgets that are going to making sure that teachers are getting the right pay so that we have more teachers that are going into these classrooms that give a damn about children. Money that is going into proper training for police officers. Because if we're going to have them and if we're not going to abolish them, then yes, reform them. Make sure they're getting the proper training to deal with mental health cases. Make sure they're getting the proper training to understand how to engage with young Black boys and young Black girls. Make sure they're getting the proper training to understand that people are legit scared of the police. Decrease some of these budgets so that police officers aren't walking around with tanks and all of these weaponry as if they're going to war with the people. Because they are supposed to be for the people. With the people, not against the people. Let's focus on ensuring that Black people are engaged in the processes of creating generational wealth. I would like to focus on making sure that Black people have wheels. Making sure that we understand that we got to stop leaving our families without life insurance policies. Let's end the GoFundMe generation. Let's make this generation the last generation of GoFundMes. Let's make sure that when our children have children, their children will be properly insured. They won't have to ask for money for funerals. Let's ensure that we have all of our rights, gay rights, abortion rights, the right to vote. These are things that I would like to see us focus on because America has showed us who America is. We know who America is. We already know what America is all about. That woman will not be the only way we have had. It's almost 70 years. Come on now. The number of presidents we have had in 70 years, we got the first black president, the first black vice president. Come on now. We've gotten gay marriage, abortion rights, all type of shit. And she's been out here living her life. So America has showed us who they are. America has showed us they not finna arrest this woman. If anything, they'll make sure she dead before they arrest her. I'm not wishing death on her, because I want to see her go through the system. I want to see her arrested. I want to see her charged. I want to see that. But at the same time, I recognize that America has showed us who they are. America has showed us. I mean, this happened in 1955. We've been through Jim Crow. We've been through an entire civil rights movement. Martin Luther King's death. We've been through numerous presidents who have tried to give us all of our rights. We've had Obama. We went through 9/11. We've seen school shootings every year. We've seen years where black communities have been ravaged by gun violence. We've seen so much. Rodney King. Trayvon Martin. So much. And she's still out here living her life. So America has showed you. America has showed you what they are. We know. We know. So I would like us as a community, as a people, to focus on things that we know we can, if we just use our strength and our numbers, if we just work hard, if we stay consistent, things that we know can happen. Because at this rate, we know we can get Obama. If we know we can get a black man in the White House, we know that we can do it again. If we did it once, we can do it again. And so I want black people to come together. I want black people to come together and be together like never before. Because we can defeat racism. I don't care what nobody said. There are a lot of people out here who aren't sold on this country. There are a lot of people out here who think that this country is full of shit. And I do too. I do too. But I think that there's a way for us to play the game the same way everybody else plays it. But we got to be together. We can't be divided. And we can't let them continue showing us who they are. And we continue to engage with them as if they are engaging with us, in good faith. Because we see that they're not engaging it with us in good faith. We see. So that's all I got to say on that particular topic. If they arrest her, I'll be all right. If they don't arrest her, I'll be all right. Because we still got work to do as a community. And so I pray for all of the people that are out there protesting, all of the people that are out there advocating, all of the people that are out there sending emails, sending text messages, and doing all of the work. And I hope that their work is not in vain. So we'll be back after this quick break. To close out the show, I have something I'm so excited to talk about when we come back after this break. So we'll be right back after this quick break of the Undisputed Politics podcast.
Voter suppression has taken many forms.
People have been denied the right to vote for well now 80 years.
First, they used the poll tax to keep black folks from voting. Then it was the literacy test. Racial terrorism and violence.
I don't want everybody to vote.
New day, same old dirty tricks.
There are those in power who are doing their darndest to discourage people from voting.
Calls for investigations after claims of voter suppression.
President Trump sabotaging efforts to vote by mail.
If your vote didn't matter, they wouldn't try so hard to take it from you. Vote early. Vote like your life depends on it. I'm exercising my right to vote, and you should too. Not because I want you to. But because he doesn't.
Vote, damn it! Vote!
All right, you guys. So going forward, we're going to have a lot of new things happening with the show. And one of the new things we're going to be having is at the end of some of my episodes, I will be sharing my thoughts on the latest topics that are floating around on social media. And so we're going to call this segment the Social Media Hot Topic. And so over the last few weeks, one of the hot topics that were on social media was about this young lady that did a skit or whatever, because a lot of things came out after she posted the video on TikTok. And pretty much she had four kids and her baby father, one of the baby's fathers of one of the children, had came over, and pretty much the young man came over to bring his son some food from McDonald's. And as he was pulling up, she was on live. She was doing the whole going all off at the mouth about how he was only bringing food for one child and he wasn't bringing food for all of the children and all of that. And so a lot of the conversation on social media came about why it was important for him to bring food for all of the children. Different conversations were had. And so I'm going to share my thoughts. The first thing I want to say is that unless you're married, unless you and this person are together, it is never a man's responsibility to take care of anybody else's kids. Do some men do it? Yes. Do some men treat it as if it's an obligation? Yes. Do some men take care of these children after you and him are no longer together? Yes. Some men are built like that. Some men are built like that when they are together with you. And some men just, when they're not together with you, they just not built like that no more. But it's never an obligation. Unless, in my opinion, unless you guys are together. And so my thoughts on that particular situation, I really hated it because a lot of the conversation I was hearing on social media, a lot of things I was seeing were from people who were going at this man. And if you saw the video, it was floating around on social media. And the things that were being said in the video. The mother was like, oh, you don't care about my kids and all this other stuff. But this man is bringing food for his child. And so for me, it felt like another situation where black men simply just cannot win. It don't matter what they do. You can try to be a good father. You can't win. The man brought food to his son. And when she started going off, the man offered to literally sit in the car and eat with his child. And she said, no, we're not going to do that because she ain't bring food for everybody. And then the young lady started talking about how she get food stamps on the 11th. And she got this and she got that. And then he asked her the appropriate question. Well, where are your other baby fathers? And so the question now is, why are you even laying down with all these men if you're not able to take care of the ones that you have? And then you're going at this man for trying to take care of the one that he has. Now, we don't know the situation. Like I said, it was a skit. A lot of us coming out saying that egg, you know, it wasn't true, all this other stuff. We don't know. We really don't know exactly what all happened with this particular situation. We don't know the complete details of the situation. If it is real, we don't know all the complete details. So we'll just say that. But for me, like I said, I feel like it's never an obligation for any man. Unless you are in a relationship and the boundary has been set that you're going to take care of all the kids. But outside of that, it's perfectly fine for a man to only want to take care of the child that is his. Because it's not an obligation for him to take care of somebody else's kids. Does it make him a better man if he does? Sure. Does it make him any less of a man if he doesn't? I don't think so. And those are just my thoughts. That's how I feel about it. If you feel any way different, please let me know on social media. We can have these discussions. I love having discussions with people on the social media. So get at me on Twitter, Instagram, hit me up on my DMs on Facebook. We can chat about it. We can go back and forth. I love it. I love debating people. I love having these conversations. So please engage with me. So that concludes today's episode of Undisputed Politics Podcast. Thank you guys for tuning in. Be on the lookout for more episodes dropping more frequently. We are going to, like I said, we're going to be adding a lot of additions to the show. I'm going to try to have more guests. I'm going to be doing different topics. I'm going to be doing a lot of different things to kind of keep you guys more engaged and following along with the show. So thank you guys again for tuning in to today's episode. Please follow and subscribe and all of the great things on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, wherever, and also on your favorite streaming platforms. Give me a review on Apple, Google, Spotify, and just continue sharing the podcast with everyone that you know and continue engaging. So thank you guys again for tuning in, and we're out.